funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, New Jersey's day in court. The state takes on New York's controversial congestion pricing plan, arguing not only will it hit people's pockets, but will greatly impact the environment.
There's something fundamentally unfair about all of that, especially when the impacts in New Jersey will be so severe and there is not a single dollar yet committed in this plan.
Plus, as the county line is put on pause for the Democrats, a deeper look at its effect on the race between the son of the embattled U.S. senior senator and the mayor of Hoboken.
Candidates haven't mattered because it's not the candidates that convince the voters, it's the ballot structure.
Also, a disability service desert. Mental health advocates call for more comprehensive care for adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities in the southern part of the state.
We're seeing this problem get worse and an exacerbation of these issues that would only continue if the state and if programs are not put in place.
And fighting hunger in New Jersey. The Trenton area soup kitchen looks to meet the need on the road.
We have been driving out hunger for a while, but now we're literally going to drive it out.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us this Wednesday night. I'm Raven Santana in for Brianna Venosi. The battle over congestion pricing continues today in federal court here in Newark. The first day of a two-day hearing seen as the biggest challenge to congestion pricing and perhaps the state's last chance to block New York's plan, which includes a $15 additional toll for anyone entering Midtown Manhattan. New Jersey attorneys arguing the Federal Highway Administration's decision to approve the MTA congestion pricing plan never took a hard look at the potential impacts on traffic and on the environment to New Jersey communities. Until the judge rules on this, New York plans to move forward with congestion pricing in June. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan was inside the courtroom for the arguments.
The reality is that New Jerseyans are going to be paying the price tag, and New Jerseyans are going to be experiencing a lot of the adverse environmental effects of this plan.
Attorney Randy Mastro pitched that argument for New Jersey in federal court, even as the MTA prepares to impose a controversial $15 a car congestion pricing toll for vehicles driving into Manhattan's business district. Jersey challenged the plan, claiming it'll divert more traffic through local neighborhoods without offering to mitigate the environmental impact of added air pollution or sharing any of the revenue with New Jersey transit agencies.
There's something fundamentally unfair about all of that, especially when the impacts in New Jersey will be so severe and there is not a single dollar yet committed in this plan in any respect for mitigation in New Jersey.
Mastro called the approval process backwards and incomplete, noting the Federal Highway Administration found no significant environmental impact before the MTA actually voted on a finalized plan. The Federal Highway Administration greenlit the project before it was approved. This process is fundamentally flawed, and they can't fix it in 2 months.
If there are maybe significant impacts, you have to do a full environmental review to take into account all of those consequences, all of those impacts, and talk about mitigation in all of those respects.
The Highway Administration's attorney explained it will review its environmental impact assessment as required by law, but without input from the public. That could result in a new, full environmental impact statement, which could take years. As for New Jersey's predicted traffic spike, MTA attorney Mark Chertok argued they don't know that. New Jersey hasn't studied it. They haven't done any modeling. Their reasons are clear. Delay, delay, delay. An MTA attorney, Robbie Kaplan, discounted the claim that Jersey will get $0.
The papers make very clear that money is going to be sent to mitigation to the various New Jersey counties that need it. The judge has done a lot of homework. He knows his stuff. He's asking very smart questions. We are happy with how things have gone so far.
Judge Leo Gordon indeed questioned how the feds would reevaluate environmental impact on New Jersey, which counties it would examine, how long the process would take, and who might offer input, asking, why should the court step in with a full judicial review over an administrative process that doesn't appear to be final? Nobody's got enough data yet to help me understand. Environmental advocates argued in an amicus brief that overall it's a good plan to cut air pollutants.
If you look at New Jersey as a whole, it would be enormous benefit to the state. Take, for example, Hudson County, where there would be an enormous reduction. Do I believe that some of the revenue should go to improve public transportation from New Jersey into New York? It should. But that's not a basis to enjoin the program.
Governor Murphy says New Jersey wants the judge to order a full environmental impact study.
And we've said, by the way, we'll live with the results of that, but that's the fair, right thing to do here, given that you're not eliminating pollution, you're displacing it from Manhattan to New Jersey, and you're charging our commuters an exorbitant fee on top of that.
There's no jury in these proceedings. The lawyers will continue their arguments tomorrow and end with closing statements. The MTA plans to launch congestion pricing in June. In Newark, I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
The latest effort to overturn a judge's ruling to stop the county line ballot system in June's Democratic primary has been rejected. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals today denied the motion by county clerks who have argued they don't have enough time to redesign before the primary. Until oral arguments are heard, clerks will have to prepare ballots in an office block format. Hoboken Mayor Ravi Bala was one of the primary candidates running off the line who signed on to the lawsuit, arguing that he and fellow candidates were put at a disadvantage in the county line system. And this latest news could give him a boost as he challenges the party-backed candidate, Congressman Rob Menendez. Senior political correspondent David Cruz reports.
In the brave new world of office block voting, every rain-soaked, wind-blown vote counts. And Hoboken Mayor Ravi Bala isn't letting any voter slip away. For Bala, who's running in the 8th Congressional District Democratic primary, it's the same game, just a different playing field.
Whether or not there's a line or no line will create a new dynamic if there's no line where people are not inherently sway towards one side or another, but can really look at each race in its own merits. What I'm really concerned about is reforming the system as a whole. That may or may not have an impact in this election. We're going to fight either way to win this election, no matter what the disposition of the litigation is.
Bala filed an amicus brief in the Andy Kim case this week, calling for the judge's decision to abandon the line to stand. For most observers, the decision helps Bala, who's facing Hudson County machine-backed Rob Menendez.
It doesn't mean that Menendez doesn't carry his advantages of incumbency with him now that there's no line. It just means that he's going to have to stand on his own 2 feet. He's going to have to make his case. Bala gets to make the case. He doesn't have the disadvantage of running off the line. It's going to be more of a head-to-head contest between the two of them.
This is a race that most observers thought was going to be close, even when the line was favoring Menendez, who we couldn't meet up with today. Bala is a well-known two-term mayor of a popular Hudson County city who's also been close to the county organization in the past. With the party line out of the equation, could independent Kyle Jacy's up to now pretty quiet campaign find some new mojo?
It certainly helps. I'm definitely not going to be mourning the line. You know, it makes it more democratic. It gives independent candidates like myself more of a chance. You know, candidates raise a ton of money just from being on the line. So, you know, I wish it happened sooner, but better late than never for sure.
Jacy's role could actually be as spoiler in a race that's too close to call. Even single digits to a third candidate could have a big impact. But this year's candidates were all set before last week's decision, so you're more likely to see its first widespread impact, assuming the decision stands, in the next primary.
I think you ultimately have to trust the voters. All of these arguments are really another way of saying the voters aren't discerning enough. They're not smart enough. Let us wise handful of people tell you what's best for you. And I just don't accept that. I think the voters are smart and are discerning, and we have to expect more of them. We have to provide them with information to make those decisions. And that's something New Jersey really hasn't done. Candidates haven't mattered because it's not the candidates that convince the voters. It's the ballot structure.
Which is another way of saying that you're running out of excuses for not voting or running for office yourself. How good that's going to be for democracy in Hudson County or New Jersey overall is also something about which we'll just have to wait and see. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And David continues the party line conversation tomorrow night on Chatbox, where he discusses the recent ruling and why some party leaders are still staunch supporters of the party line ballot system. That's Thursday at 6 p.m. on our NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. Treating addiction is a difficult process that can become even more complicated when a person also suffers from mental health disorders. Medical experts in New Jersey recently gathered to discuss the best ways to treat addiction and mental health disorders as part of Knockout Opioid Abuse Day. Melissa Rose Cooper reports on the difficulties in treatment and why only a quarter of those suffering from both get help.
We know that the opioid crisis and the addiction crisis, you know, it is impacting our entire state. There is not a community, a demographic that is immune from this.
A major issue, Angela Conover, director of opioid response and prevention with the Partnership for a Drug-Free New Jersey, says is continuously resulting in the loss of friends, family, and neighbors. According to the Office of the State Chief Medical Examiner, data shows more than 2,500 people died of suspected drug overdoses in 2023. That's down from about 2,900 in 2021. But Conover says it's still unacceptable.
You know, we continue to put all of our resources in, you know, trying to prevent dependency, addiction, and deaths. And when we look at the issue, we have to see that there are some real connections to mental health. And so it's important that we look at the entire issue and everything that everyone is facing and dealing with, you know, on a daily basis.
So experts are coming together, taking part in this learning webinar called When Addiction and Mental Health Collide, to figure out the best approaches to treating co-occurring addiction and mental health disorders.
In the United States, 64.3% of adults with opioid use disorder suffer from a current comorbid mental illness. And that's pretty high, right? That people can have both the comorbid mental illness and an opioid addiction.
Tim Vermillion, therapist with the Veterans Affairs Administration, says chronic pain is one of the top reasons people may turn to opioids for self-medication.
Because as the things happen, you know, as you're starting to have that chronic pain, it's not just that you had a mental health concern to begin with, but now that you have chronic pain or some other issue, perhaps that's going to cause some mental health concerns, some adjustment disorders, maybe start to stimulate your a dormant major depressive episode or something like a bipolar episode or something like that.
But only a fourth of adults with concurrent opioid use disorder and acute mental illness receive treatment for both problems.
The concerns are always that how are we looking at a person from a humanistic approach? So are we treating the person or are we treating just the substance? So for, you know, for my work in the field, I really like to look at everything going on with the whole entire person. So not just their diagnosis. And I feel like a lot of people get caught up in, okay, you have an opioid use disorder. Like that's how we're going to treat you. And there's a lot of stigma that gets attached to that person and specifically that population.
But instead of treating all patients the same, experts say it's critical to figure out the root issues for each individual.
You look at someone who is using opioids daily. What else do they have going on? So do they lack social support? Do they lack housing? Do they lack any type of shelter? Do they lack, do they have food insecurities? So if I were to sit here and say to you that every single person who has an opioid use disorder needs to go into a 12-patient a 12-month inpatient program, that's not the case because everyone is different.
Experts agree early intervention in treating co-occurring addiction and mental health disorders is key. They hope discussions like this will provide healthcare professionals as well as loved ones with the tools they need to effectively tackle these challenges. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
Mental health advocates in South Jersey are calling for more services for those with developmental and intellectual disabilities experiencing mental health issues. Some calling the region a disability service desert, with the only option for mental health services being local emergency rooms. But many families report waiting for hours in hospital ERs, only to be discharged and sent home with no follow-up plan in place. According to the Centers for Disease Control, adults with disabilities report experiencing frequent mental distress almost five times often as adults with disabilities, which is why the advocates in the region are now calling on the state to fill the gap. Mental health writer Bobby Breyer joins me for more. Bobby, throughout your reporting, did you find what was most surprising when it came to seeking services for those in New Jersey?
For a lot of families and loved ones in New Jersey who are in this situation, they oftentimes have to go to, a primary care doctor to find the right services with wraparound services that include behavioral health. Now, that's okay when they're in a non-emergency situation, but when they're in a life-threatening or a crisis situation, they often end up in the emergency room. And it was most surprising to me to hear the amount of time that families spent in the emergency room really in these situations. So the problem with that is really twofold. First of all, they're often, their loved one is given medication to essentially calm down in many situations and then discharged without a plan in place. And then in addition to that, they often will sit for hours waiting for a bed to open up. The issue there is that there's only about 32 beds in total in the state, and that's in Trinitas Regional Medical Center in Elizabeth. That's for both adult children and adolescents.
You know, we know that the lack of mental health services doesn't just affect patients, it mm-hmm. also affects caregivers. You know, so what are some of the challenges they're up against?
They're up against a few challenges in particular. One is that if they're in a crisis or their loved one's in a crisis, really the only option for them right now is to go to the emergency room, to 911. But in that situation in South Jersey, it's really a difficult situation because there's really no beds right. in South Jersey. So they would have to essentially wait for a bed at Trinitas to open up, or they would be discharged back home, where the problem just continues to repeat itself. As we all know, that really leads to a lot of caregiver burnout and the cycle repeating itself. So right now, the state is really launching this program to look for a nonprofit that could address this issue, as well as calls, reducing calls to police and reducing calls to emergency rooms.
You know, currently Trinitas Regional Medical Center in Elizabeth is the only hospital in the state that caters to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are experiencing mental health crisis, as you noted, but it only has a few dozen beds. So what is the state doing to fill that gap?
Right now, this gap is really being addressed through the state through this mobile crisis prevention and intervention service. They call it the START model. Essentially, that means that they would dispatch a team of people, oftentimes to a person's home, to provide education and services, not just in the moment, but follow-up care as well, if necessary. It's a model that has been replicated in states like California, New York, and North Carolina with a lot of success. So this is a promising step in the right direction for the state and for family members as well, but it remains to be seen who will get this grant, who will get the over $3 million that the state is setting aside for these crisis stabilization teams, and what will come of that.
You know, what is most at risk here if this doesn't happen?
I think most at risk is that you're going to see these problems that we're already seeing repeated again and again, that families, if somebody has, say, a co-occurring mental health issue along with an intellectual or developmental disability, has to go to the emergency room. They're often going to be discharged right back to their home. They're going to be waiting for a bed. And the problem is really never addressed. In many cases, advocates have just said it's a Band-Aid approach that is really not addressing the issue. So we're seeing this problem get worse and an exacerbation of these issues that would only continue if the state and if programs are not put in place.
Bobby Breyer, excellent reporting as usual. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Raven.
in our spotlight on Business Report tonight, the U.S. is seeing a boom in renewable energy, even as offshore wind has been slower to take off here in New Jersey and in other states. That's according to an analysis out today from the nonprofit Climate Central that shows that in the last decade, electricity generated from wind has more than doubled, and solar power has increased more than eightfold since 2014. In New Jersey, energy generated by solar jumped by more than 160% over the last decade. And last year, New Jersey generated enough electricity from solar to power nearly 500,000 homes. More than half of that electricity came from small-scale solar installations like rooftop systems. Peter Gerard of Climate Central says that while solar is still Jersey's main source of renewable energy, that could change quickly once offshore wind comes online here.
I know there were two projects approved this January, and combined, they've got a potential capacity, at least what they're claiming, is almost 4,000 megawatts. That would be enough to power about 1.8 million homes. And that alone approaches about half of all homes in the state of New Jersey. So if that kind of capacity were to come online, it would increase the amount of renewable energy that New Jersey is generating by four times.
Turning to Wall Street, stocks are rebounding after a shaky start to the quarter. Here is how the markets closed for today. Effort to drive out hunger in the state capital is getting underway as more residents face food insecurity. The Trenton Area Soup Kitchen has seen a sharp increase in the number of people seeking help, and it's launching a food truck to meet the need, focusing on some of the city's most vulnerable residents and meeting people where they are. Joanna Gagas reports as part of our ongoing series, Hunger in New Jersey, focusing on food insecurity here in the state.
We have been driving out hunger for a while, but now we're literally going to drive it out.
The Trenton Area Soup Kitchen cut the ribbon on their newest vehicle to stop hunger and food insecurity in their community, a food truck that'll deliver free meals to those who need it.
Trenton, for as small as it is, it's difficult to get here. Transportation's an issue. We're working on it. This is a way for us to really reach out to the people that can't necessarily get here. Families with kids, the elderly, chronically homeless, the most in need.
TASK, as it's called for short, serves 1,100 hot meals a week at each of its 36 sites in Trenton and the region. They also provide weekly groceries to residents in need and deliver meals around the holidays. But that 1,100 number is double their pre-pandemic volume, says TASK CEO Joyce Campbell.
While one would hope that having 36 community meal sites spread through Trenton in the county would meet the need, sadly it does not. The numbers of those who are hungry have risen, and we've seen a sharp increase of those who are seeking help with food.
People like Angela Purcell, who comes here when she's not able to afford groceries, but says a food truck would have helped a lot when she couldn't make it here to their main location on Escher Street recently.
When I had my foot surgery, there was plenty of times like, oh, I can't take my medicine right now because I don't have nothing to eat, can't make it there to eat, so it was a little difficult.
So this would have had a big impact.
Yeah, if they had the food truck, then it would have been a great help to me.
The food truck is going to create so many more opportunities for TASK to reach the hungry in Mercer County. It's going to also increase TASK's visibility in our community. Some people know about our site here, but they don't know about all the other things that TASK does. And just having this truck rolling down the street will create so many more visible opportunities for TASK.
Trenton Mayor Reed Gusciora came to celebrate the ribbon cutting and said the impact that TASK has, not just with the food kitchen, but all the other services it offers, is a critical lifeline for so many in his city.
It's wonderful. I mean, TASK, if they were not here, they would create a catastrophe out in the streets. And they help so many people, lift them up. And they do more than food. They help give computer classes, job training, literacy skills, mental health. So they do a holistic approach to the community that's underserved.
The trucks have been going out for a week now, and already the impact is tremendous, says Chief Operating Officer Paul Jensen.
We started out with two sites this week. Next week we're going to be at three different locations, and the following week we should be at four. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we will be out in the community providing more meals in areas that we haven't been able to touch previously.
They're not delivering on the weekends yet, but it could be a possibility in the future, especially for families whose kids rely on meal programs in schools and often go hungry on the weekends.
There is no barriers to when we can go out and what we can do. We're just trying to, you know, make sure we can staff it and do it consistently is the key.
The goal is to get several more of these trucks out on the road every day. Each one could average another 1,000 meals a week, having a huge impact here in Trenton and in the greater community. In Trenton, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
That does it for us tonight, but don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Raven Santana. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, and by the PSCG Foundation.
I'm Nick Manis, 2023 President of New Jersey Realtors. Whether it's helping a family find their perfect home or securing space for small business owners, New Jersey Realtors have been helping their clients achieve their dreams for more than a century. No matter what your unique needs are, there's a New Jersey Realtor for you. Find your realtor at nj.realestate/find.